Okay. So, well, today we were talking about the over 40-meter laser monitoring program, and I hope that you are still awake and will enjoy my talk. I will do my best. So I'm talking about a number of people, and we call ourselves the OMG, the over 40-meter monitoring group, mostly Caltech people and with some friends all over the world. And a few members moved recently from institutions, and we got a new members. I did a lot of fun working with them. So basically, I will be telling you about all the work that we have been doing. So basically, our program it's monitoring blazars in radio, trying to match the capabilities that we have from Fermi, monitoring blazars in gamma rays, with the idea of learning about the things that we all want to learn. Where does the gamma ray emission originate in blazars, and what characterizes the gamma ray detected sources from the radio perspective. And what we are doing is that we are monitoring the sources in radio. We have a large sample of objects, and we started observing in 2007, so we pre-selected the sources based on the egret detection. And so most of our sources are not gamma ray detected. We have all the gamma ray detected, so, and we observe them independently of the gamma ray state with the idea of having an unbiased sample, not only looking at flares, and we observe twice a week. That gives us that's very high cadence. And so another important point is that we are looking at the cross correlations in time domain and also in the non-time domain using robust statistical techniques, because that's something that's really important when we look at this. If we just want to do more than just looking at patterns. So our program, we are observing more than 1,500 blazars with the 40-meter telescope. Okay. With a 40-meter telescope, we also added all the 1 lakh detected sources, and we will add the 2 lakh soon, at 15 gigahertz with a 3 gigahertz bandwidth. And typical flux measurements have 4 millijanskis of error, that's and also a 3% uncertainty, that's mostly from pointing errors. So basically, we are observing all the gamma ray detected blazars above minus 20 degrees in declination, and also a large sample of non-gamma ray detectors that serve as works as a comparison sample. So all the time. So I was thinking about how to show you all my almost 16,000 likers, and it was hard to decide what to do. So then I put this picture together of Enrico Fermi and Karol Szczanski, and each one of the pixels is one of my likers. So these are 16,000 likers to make the face of Fermi, and almost 16,000 to make the face of Karol Szczanski. So ideally, I hope to show this picture, but with the with Fermi sources for the next meeting. That's the idea. So then let's look at a few examples. So that's, for example, 3C286, our primary calibrator, and flat doesn't do much. That's what we use it as calibrator, and that's another example, a radio source that has a lot of radioactivity. These are 3.5 years of data. Another source, a single flare. And another source that, I mean, it's not doing much. So as you see, some sources have a lot of activity, but while some of them have only one flare. So it's that's why it would be good if we keep observing, because in radio, most of the sources don't have that many flares. And we would like to have more flares in order to see how the properties are varying with time. First results of our program, We look at 2 years of data, and we were only looking at the SIGGRAPH sample that was a candidate gamma ray blazers preselected before a launch of Fermi, and we find that what we call the intrinsic modulation index, but it's basically the RMS of the source divided by the mean value, so we can compare all the sources at the same time, and we find that the gamma ray loud sources are more variable. This is the mean value of the modulation index. The gamma ray sources are more variable in radio than the non-gamma ray detected sources. We also find some differences between the VLAX and the FSRQs, with the VLAX being more variable, and we also find that there was some difference between the low redshift sample and the high redshift sample. This is all in Richard Serol paper that was published a few months ago. So we look at this with an extended data set now 3.5 years of data, and we still see the difference between the gamma ray detected and the non-gamma ray detected in this longer data set. But if we look at the VLAX versus the FSRQs, for example, we see that the trend, the difference between the VLAX and FSRQs get reversed. So now the, if we use one lag, the VLAX are more variable than the FSRQs. Now, I think that what this is telling us is that we need to refine the sample appropriately. So it's probably best to use, instead of one lag or SIGGRAPH, that they all have biases, we should look at some kind of a flux-limited sample before we start making conclusions about this. But this is probably a robust thing, the difference between the gamma ray loud and the gamma ray, gamma ray detected and non-gamma ray detected. We also see that the redshift trend, it's also there, but it's less significant. But this is way more complicated because there is if we look at sources of different redshift, we are looking at different time scales because of the we corrected for that, but we are looking at different frequencies. So it's really, to understand this, we need to look at multi-frequency data. So then this is all using the not using the time domain information, basically using the basic variability properties, mean fluxes, and also the variability, the RMS, or the intrinsic modulation index. We also find, I forgot to say, but we also see the gamma radian gamma ray correlation. But the other thing that we can do is look at the time domain. And the idea of looking at the time domain is searching for correlations in the time domain between radio and gamma rays in order to locate the gamma ray emission time. So many ideas, but one is that the gamma rays are produced very close to the central engine, and in the other models, it's being produced very far away. So we did this with using the two-year light curves and the brightest gamma ray blazers detected by Fermi in the first 3 months. Those are 106 sources with 11-month light curves and weekly sampling. Of those, we have 52 in our sample that were in zero. So we look at those, and the kind of data that we have is this. So we have the radial light curve here with two episodes of high activity, and the gamma ray light curve that has a very big flare and another a couple of smaller flares there. So we cross-correlate them, and we see a lot of peaks. So then the question is, we are using the Edelson and Krolich method, and as you can imagine, the number of data points that we use to calculate this time being is very different from the one that we use close to the center. So evaluating the significance requires Monte Carlo simulations, and what we do is that we assume a model for the light curves, and we are modeling the radio and gamma ray light curves using a power law, power spectral density that has this value for radio and gamma rays. We simulate independent light curves and cross-correlate them, and then we do repeat this many times so we can get the distribution of random cross-correlations for each time in. So we get this distribution. So we get the 1 sigma counter for the random cross-correlation, the 2 sigma, and the 3 sigma. So if we look at this light curve, now we can tell if the cross-correlations are significant or not. And in this case, none of the peaks are significant. So we did this for the 52 sources, and we find that only 7 out of the 52 sources have significant cross-correlation. So that's telling us that in most of the sources, we don't see any significant correlation. This is just looking at the correlations. So this is for all the sources, and if we look at the 3 sigma significance, we have 7 cases, and we have almost the same number of positive lags and negative time lags. This is the radio lagging, and this is radio leading. The possibly interesting thing, but I would like to look at a more larger sample, is that most of the ones that have significant correlations are VLAGs. So other things that we can do with the data to understand the time domain variability to study the power spectral density. So we did this for all the sources in our sample, and separate them in the gamma ray detected in one lag and the ones not detected in one lag. And this is the power spectral density exponent. So going from zero white noise to very steep power spectral density. So you can see that there is a difference between the gamma ray detected and the non-detected, where the gamma ray detected have steeper power spectral density. Basically, if you have that means that the gamma ray detected sources have flares in radio. So basically, the sources that we detect in gamma rays are the ones that have flares in radio. We also did that with the VLAX and FSRQs, but there is no difference. So this is what we have done. What's ahead? A lot. So the the number of sources that I'm using now is small, it's only 52, and we have 400 detections in gamma ray. So we will be looking at those in order to do my population studies. Also, with longer life, we can look at the variability in individual sources, characterize the power spectral densities, and maybe using more complicated models to understand the Likers. And it's very good because we got an extension for this program, and we will observe them for 3 more years, and we hope that Fermi gets extended so we can look at this. Another thing that we know that is very important is polarization monitoring. In optical, there have been these indications that the optical polarization changes, the angle changes for gamma ray flares. And we are trying to look at this in radio and also in optical. So in radio, we are building a new receiver for the 40-meter telescope that we call Cupel. And instead of 3 gigahertz bandwidth, we will cover the whole Ku band from 12 gigahertz to 18 gigahertz. And I show you some kind of the schematics last year. And now we actually have the hardware there. So we have the front end, the horns, the cryostat, the front end electronics, and also the back end electronics. So we're working on that, and we hope to commission by in March or May next year. So that's not a project anymore. We have the hardware there. So we also optical monitoring program. That's the same optical monitoring program that Manolis was talking about with the Yaskinakas telescope. And this is what I was saying. So we plan to look at a large sample of data in the optical to study the polarization and have the basically a more complete picture of what's going on in blazars. And this program is funded, and we are building. I mean, the instrument is being built, and observations will start next year. So basically, that's it. We have a lot of activity in the monitoring. We are extending our capabilities, and we hope that Fermi gets extended so we can take a look at the optical polarization too. Many interesting things. We are finding differences between the gamma ray detected and non-gamma ray detected using the variability. We also find that correlations, at least at 15 gigahertz, are not very common. So most sources don't have significant correlations. And we are also studying the time domain properties of the Likers, the PSD, and all those things, and having the polarization monitoring. So, thank you. No, I haven't. I think what I'm trying to do is to get the gamma ray Likers, because I have more sources. So the basic idea is to try this with longer Likers and at least 100 sources. I think that's probably like more important for us, because we really have coverage in a lot of sources and we have long time series now. So I think that we can really get to that point before we start doing this tagging. But that's also something that we will probably try with the dimmer source, because we have 400 gamma ray detections. But for most of the, if we get out of the brightest 50 or 60 sources, we start to get a lot of upper limit. So I think that there, at that point, stacking will be important. Oh, it's huge. So that's what I'm not saying that much about it. There is not a coherent picture with the 52 sources. So it's really, I mean, we really need to look at more of them. That's the game up here. And also the only interesting thing was that all of them were being online. So let's see if that holds when I try it with 100.
Okay, let's thank Walter again.